It is possible to build a big business. It is possible to be the next Amazon. It doesn't matter what your background is, black, white, it's available to everyone. And thanks to companies like Impact X, it is possible as well to be a black entrepreneur and get the funding you need to take it to the next stratospheric level. I usually say done is better than perfect, and that's so true. But the message here today is think big, bring your A game, be resilient, be ready to be in it for the long haul, and leave your money on the table. You've got to be able to play out and wait for your returns. And above all, just go for it. Welcome to the You Unleashed podcast with me, Femi Akinyemi, the podcast where we share great ideas on how to rocket and unleash your best in the workplace and in life. Sometimes I use my own personal stories, but sometimes we just have to bring people who know a lot more than we do to come into the studio and just bless us with their amazing knowledge and how we can become unleashed as well. You know what I usually say? I've become a believer that done is better than perfect. So in whatever it is you do, just start and you'll be amazed how much better you get along and you're not too far from perfection eventually. So with that said, let's get into it. Now, I remember a very long time ago when I was much younger, I am still young, I was thinking about going into tech and becoming an entrepreneur and grand visions of going into Silicon Valley. And one of the things that ended up slowing me down was I didn't really know what to do or where to go or how to raise the money. And eventually, I just got scared, intimidated. There were a number of words you can use. And that dream kind of died away, I hesitate to say. And for someone who likes to inspire people, I'm not proud to say that, but it's kind of therapeutic to say it as well. And then sometime earlier in the year, this year, I ran into someone, I was on a show with someone, and he was just so inspirational. And he's coming at things with a completely different angle. And if he was around when I had my idea, God knows where I'd be right now. But now I've met him as well. There's a big chance this thing could still happen. So, but he is a technology executive who spent a career building the value of digital companies through innovative strategies. And he has done this at public and private companies, including giants like AOL, Time Warner, Mobile Posse, SwiftKey, etc. In 2018, he was part of a prominent group of Black European and US serial entrepreneurs to found Impact X Capital. This company is a double bottom line venture capital firm, and I will explain what that means later, that invests in underrepresented innovators in Europe, focusing on growth stage companies in three distinct sectors, digital and tech, health and education and lifestyle, and as well as media and entertainment. He's a sought-after board member and advisor in the technology space. And in September 2020, he was appointed to the board of Tech Nation, the body that represents UK startups. He sits on the board of companies in San Francisco, London, and acts as an advisor to companies in the US, India, and the UK. Obviously, he's very passionate about civic activities. And in London, he serves on the board of Autograph ABP and Southwark Cathedrals Council. And in the US, he has been a board member of the US of the Washington Performing Arts. Loves to donate his time and resources to many contemporary causes, including the Smithsonian Institute Museum of African American History and Culture, and lots of other similar ventures. But he also helps underrepresented voices, especially young Black British women who produce films. President Obama appointed him to the Small Business Administrators Council on Underserved Communities, and he's an evaluator for White House fellow applicants. And he holds degrees from Princeton and Harvard Law. And in 2018, he was named in the top UK's BAME, and that's Black and Minority and Ethnics, leaders in tech. And in 2019 and 20, he was voted one of the most influential Black people in Britain on the Power List. It gives me great pleasure to introduce and welcome, and it's a big pleasure, and we're lucky to have him, Eric Collins. Eric, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Femi, and it's lucky for me to be here. So thank you for taking the time and letting me talk with you about some of the things about which I'm passionate.
Yeah, it was great because I remember when we first met, and I didn't know, and I think this is probably what a lot of us don't realize, and this is probably the gap you're trying to fill. One of the things I didn't realize was there is someone who's got the vision to put in place a underrepresented focus, and let's be honest, Black focused to a certain degree, Black and Black women focused venture capitalist firm that is looking to see minority folks do big things, and you'll want to help them. So it was quite an eye-opener, and I guess that was probably the driver for you as well.
Oh, it was very much the driver that, and well, let me step back for a second. The thing for me, Femi, is I believe that people show initiative in various ways. You have put together this podcast. You actually get audiences to come and listen. You get guests to come and speak. I think it's phenomenal. It's an example of entrepreneurship. It's an example of taking an idea and then making it work. So I'm very pleased with this. And I want you to think about this as another entrepreneurial venture. What I would love to think about as a venture capitalist is how big could it actually be? Is there a way to, and that's one of the thing about venture capitalists, is that we are always looking at the market and we're saying that there are ideas that are coming up every day. People are coming up with the great ideas. People are saying, well, let's stream this, that's called Netflix. Let's deliver this, that's called Amazon. Let's be able to, you know, fix this, that's called Medtronic, you know, a health tech company. There are all sorts of things that are coming up on a day-to-day basis. And the great thing about it is that there is generally money out there that wants to get behind that idea to not just make it a reality, but to make it a huge success. And venture capital is one of those types of money. The bank tries to do it by getting a giving you a loan and trying to get money back from you with some interest. Your family might give it to you with a little bit of an upside. They might take a small percentage, but they want you to be successful. And a venture capitalist is just in the continuum of various people who are farther and farther away from you who want to try and make you successful.
I love that. And I think that's the big thing. It's really that whole thing about thinking about how big you can become. And that's the thing where for a lot of us, including minorities who want to create businesses, individuals as well, there's no role models. So a lot of us come in and we might, as you're young and you've got these visions, but the older you get, the less role models you see and the visions just fade away. And I guess you've got that challenge in, you're challenging us as well, because you're doing two things. You're here to help us, but you're also challenging us to say, hey guys, step up. You've got to think big. You can do this too.
Isn't one of the biggest barriers is the expectation of small things? It's just that we expect limited success. We expect to be able to, you know, finish up university. We expect to then get a job and hold on to that job. We expect to have a home and we expect to own that home outright at some point. We expect to have disposable income to be able to do, you know, pleasant and nice things for ourselves as well as for our family. So those are some things, and that is not a bad set of aspirations. Impact X, and sort of what I think about in my life, is that I would like to try and create a different world. And I can create it by lending people money to buy a house one house at a time. And that will help them because for most people, that's their major asset. That's a major piece of wealth that they have. And so maybe I can do that. But I think about organizations that did not exist 20 years ago. We now know those organizations and they influence everything that we do. TikTok did not exist 20 years ago. Google barely existed 20 years ago. Microsoft didn't exist. It didn't exist 50 years ago. Amazon didn't exist 30 years ago. These are organizations that are now some of the most powerful organizations in the world. And if you think about them, they actually influence governments. I mean, the EU is suing is suing Google right now and investigating Facebook. Those are corporations that are so important and so big that a government has said, we need to look at it the same way they would look if someone started to bomb the shores of Europe. That, in my estimation, shows the impact of being able to build a large and influential organization that has outsized reach in a short period of time, in our lifetime. And I think those are generational opportunities that could actually change. And if we have more of those businesses that are started by, run by Black people, instead of what we see many times is those same organizations, none of them are run by Black people. There are very few Black people in any of those organizations I've just named who are in the C-suite, who are making very big decisions on behalf of the organizations. And if we start organizations that don't have to be retrofitted and say, oh, we never hired a Black woman, so now let's go and find a Black woman, but instead we've never had a Black man on our board, so now let's go find a Black man. If they start off with the understanding that Black people in those sorts of roles create the best results, and therefore that's how we build the organization on the, you know, along with teams and teams of Black women and Black men and white women and white, you know, that's what I'm looking for. And I think that that is an answer to a lot of problems, including disparities in net and wealth, disparities in education, disparities in health, disparities in many different areas.
Amazing. So I'll take you back a bit, because I do have a lot I want to get to, but I want to take you back to a bit when you were a young pup. And are you still a young pup? What was the aha moment? He's shaking his head. Where was the aha moment that, you know what? I mean, was it someone or something that just triggered this passion and this, when you started to see the world differently? Or is it, because it's not, probably not innate, but what drove this? What was that aha moment for you that this can be changed? This can drive change?
Debbie, are most of your listeners from the UK, would you say?
A lot of them are from the UK. Okay. A lot of them are from the UK. We've got some from the United States.
Okay.
We've got quite a few from Nigeria. And oddly, I've got one or two listeners in the Antarctica. So I do want to know who that is.
I love it. You know, from penguins all the way to, you know, whatever, you do all of the, you know, to all of the species. So Femi, so I grew up in one of the most magical, monumental, and miserable times in American history. I was born at the very end of the Civil Rights Movement. I was born in the Deep South. I was born in the state of Alabama. I was born on a Black college campus. So think about this. In the United States, the Civil Rights Movement, there's Martin Luther King talking about things there. You're watching people getting bitten by attack dogs. You're watching poses on people. And during that, my parents are young parents who are raising children and saying, we're going to have children. We're going to have children in a place where segregation ruled. Jim Crow was very much there. My parents tell me stories of having to make sure, and my dad was a professor at the university, and mom was an instructor, and they had to take a literacy test. They had to take a voting test in order to be able to prove that they could then vote. They did not have the right to vote. I was the first person in my entire family, my grandparents, great-grandparents, great-great-grandparents, aunts, uncles, sisters, brothers, the first person who was guaranteed the right to vote when I was born in the United States. And my family has been in the United States for hundreds of years. So that's a long time to be a Black person. And I'm born in that particular moment. And that's why I say it's a miserable time to be born. But it's also monumental because it created for me. And I think, and this tries to answer your question as to was there a triggering moment. I think I was born. I was conceived in protest. I was born in protest. I was born with the idea that it's more than just about you and that you have a mission to a group. And that, and I had around me a whole lot of people who believe that same thing. And then those people have the fortunate circumstances to be able to then act at a moment in history, instead of being lynched like George Floyd, instead of being, you know, assassinated like Martin Luther King, actually made and were able to grow their family, grow them up, give them opportunities, send them out into the world to actually be a next generation. So for me, it started I would say, you know, some people would say from birth, I think from conception, probably. This has been one of the things that has said, you have not only responsibility to your family, not only responsibility to yourself, not only responsibility to your country, but to your people. And your people, it's a big definition of people. It's not just Black people, but your people. You have a responsibility to your people.
No, that's amazing. And what I take from that is you were born at this inflection point, this inflection point. And that inflection point was a point of looking forward. Anything is possible. I'm the first of my generation that can vote and was born to educated parents. So for me, the world is my oyster. And why should I not? If I've got it all, the world is my oyster. I can. So I love that. And I suppose that's what drives some of these phrases I heard, because I like to research, and I had you coming on, I said, I need to make sure I'm prepped and I'm ready for Eric. Mm. And I started to research. And some of the things that I kept hearing you say is, put our money where our mouth is. Mm-hmm. See funding targeted underrepresented entrepreneurs. And I loved that, put our money where our mouth is. And it speaks to the need that it's not action. You want to see action, and you're a man of action. Mm-hmm. And I take it that's probably one of, when I was thinking about what are these habits, and I guess one of your things is it's action. And you were speaking at the time about the George Floyd protest, and one of the things you said was there is a place for protest, absolutely, but there's got to be a place for the other side. It's almost this two-pronged attack. Mm-hmm. We're making our voices heard, but we're also making an impact economically and financially. Mm-hmm. And speak to that a bit around the need for a lot of us to realize that whilst talking is good, we've got to start to think around our actions.
It influences everything that I do. And I'm so glad, Femi, well, first of all, you did your research, which is flattering. I'm so glad that it maybe is clear in what I'm saying, that I do believe in execution. When I talk to an entrepreneur, I want you to have executed something. The greatest idea, the people who come to me and say, I have this great idea. And then the funny thing is they haven't taken any risk. They haven't actually built out the idea. They've written it down. They might have created a nice presentation. They haven't assembled a team. They haven't tried to do it on paper. They haven't tried to do anything, but they want to ask me for money. And I'm very pleased that they are creative, but what I need them to do is to actually show me that they are going to be able to follow through, and that's going to be sort of execution and putting themselves on the line with respect to this. I do believe, quite frankly, that when I was growing up, there's a thing, there used to be a saying, Black is Black power and Black is beautiful. And you know, those sorts of things are nice things to say, and there are lots of nice things that we can say, but the proof is actually in the pudding. Do we actually show up? So I believe in, you know, Black businesses, but then I've never actually patronized a Black business other than my barber. I believe in Black empowerment. I believe that Black people are as, you know, able and even more able than other people. But the only Black thing that I really listen to, that I really take comfort in and sort of spend time with, is Black church or Black music. I don't have a Black lawyer who works on my accounts. I didn't use a Black mortgage broker when I bought my house. I've never thought to use a Black person because it's the National Health, to be my dentist or something else. It's very interesting how this is how racism is so pervasive. This is how systemic inequalities are not only existing out there and sort of put upon us by others, but how they have been internalized and then help us to keep ourselves in a certain sort of a space. That we have to be reminded to buy Black on Tuesday. It's just not a thought that that's what we would be looking for. We know how to use Amazon, we know how to use Google, but it requires something like George Floyd to remind us that there is benefit and power. And, you know, the thing that I have to agree with someone who said to me the other day, George Floyd's family, we owe such a debt to George Floyd's family for allowing us to piggyback on his murder. Someone said to me today, lynching, in order to then get enough attention and enough is enough for us to then move forward. So we have to thank that. We have to thank his family for actually giving us the ability to do this. But I would say that you know, quite frankly, we are very much, many of us are willing to pay lip service, but when push comes to shove, we are in the trenches and we're at our job and we're asked to sort of hire someone and the best person. We don't want to seem as though we're too black. We don't want to seem as though we're too female focused. We don't want to seem as though, you know, we want to fit in some ways, and therefore we'll make some compromises and decisions. And those decisions have absolute and somewhat dire consequences, in my opinion, from time to time. Not all decisions, but some of them do. And so I believe that we have to be deliberate. We have to, putting your money where your mouth is just a conversation about being deliberate in your approach. Decide what it is that's important to you and then follow through in the actions that you take.
That's a powerful point. And it speaks as well to something else I want to talk about, is niche. And I love this because I suppose in a way, as a VC, you're abiding by your own rules, because you're actually a niche VC. I think it's fair to say, right, that you're targeting a certain demographic of entrepreneurs. And
I would say that we're smart VCs. And so niche sometimes is, and I would say smart because when you're investing, so for those of you who are out there who are investing, you're trying not to follow the trends. You know, Bitcoin, so I read yesterday that Bitcoin is expected to go from $24,000 a coin to $40,000 a coin. You know, maybe you can follow the herd in terms of that. But what I would say is that the smartest way to invest, if you're an institutional investor, is you invest in places that not everyone else is going. You utilize the tools that others are using, but don't go the same space. Those are places where it's as if you go to an auction and you're going to an auction and everyone wants to buy the Isaac Julian print, or wants to buy the Frank Bowling piece, or wants to buy the Maria Amadou. These are all black artists. And they all are bidding on that same thing. But there's some other piece of work that other people, that not a lot of people are bidding on. The piece that's very popular, that price is going up and up because there's a market for it and there's scarcity. For the people, we want to find the places where there is not that same perception, but we know that this is going to increase in value and we can create the demand for it later. So that's what we're doing. And so some people call that niche. What I would call it is smart. Don't go where all the money is running. Go where the money hasn't yet discovered. Be on the cutting edge. Then that allows you to get much more of a return after the fact. Move to the neighborhood. If you move to the biggest house in the best neighborhood, the value of that house is not going to rise as much as the house in the same neighborhood that needs a lot of work and it's ugly. And then you make that into something else. You will see much more value for that than you will buying the biggest house that's well done and that all of the renovations were done last week and you have to buy at the top of the market. That's not a great way to get a return if what you're looking for is financial return. And ImpactX is looking for several things, but one of the most important things is we want financial return so that our black and brown and female investors get their money plus more and can give us more the next time to invest in other opportunities.
I get it now. So what we're saying here is the black is underrepresented, undermined, and to a large extent, I don't want to say underexploited, but I say it's under, if that's the word to use in a positive term, it's not been exploited. So there's a lot of talent lying fallow, and what you're doing is you are looking to invest in it.
Absolutely.
And which is the double bottom line, which is it just so happens as well that you were also bringing about social change to these said people as well.
You, Femi, I couldn't have said it better.
Amazing. Because what I loved about that, and that's where the magic of thinking big is when you tell us, is think about creating jobs as well. So if you're thinking big, you're thinking about creating jobs, because if you create jobs, you also have an opportunity for other people who are minority to create jobs, have the right policies in place. That means that some of these racist, some overtly or covertly racist policies are not in place. And then you create the workplace of your dreams for your kind of people.
Correct. And we can do this. This is the interesting thing for me. We do it all the time in hairdressers. We do it in barbershops. We do it in restaurants. And I think we can do the same thing in companies that look just as good as Airbnb. We can do it in companies that look just as interesting as what's another become Monzo or TransferWise. I believe that that's exactly what the Black population of Europe, I expand this beyond the UK, and that the Black population of Europe is poised to put in front of the world some of the best technologies, some of the fastest growing companies, and some of the most valuable organizations in history. And that's what we are betting on. And we have been able to do that several times, and I think prove it several times already in terms of some of the growth that we've seen in some of the organizations in which we've invested.
Oh, lovely. So, and I guess that all comes, the ability to do that ends up being rooted in excellence. There is a prerequisite for excellence, because if your business idea is going to go where you want it to go, you have to be excellent. And I've spoken to you long enough to know that you seek to be excellent and you want your entrepreneurs to match you for that excellence. Because I think one of the things you said was, if you're coming on board with a VC, don't expect holidays, because don't expect holidays. And I think this is what I want to speak to is, I think for a lot of people of our listeners, some who are budding entrepreneurs or some who are still in the corporate space or are in the corporate space, mm-hmm. and you happen to be someone who's managed to rise to the top in both fields, what are the messages you have out there for people about this excellence? Because I think sometimes, because it's easy to say be excellent, but for you, what are your rules? What habits? What helps you be excellent?
Can I just say there are only two things? So I like the term excellence because I think we all understand what that means. I would say that the two things that have to happen is that you have to be able to grind it out. You have to be able to toil. Entrepreneurship, it's sort of like being a famous actor. You know, to be a famous actor, to become Lenny Henry, you have to, Lenny was telling me his story about playing a lot of clubs in a lot of different spaces. These were working men's clubs in the 1960s and 70s as a young Black man in all white clubs of working class white people, and that you have to grind it out. And then there'll be a time where if you grind it out long enough and you sort of get your craft right, then you might be able to sort of make something big happen. But if you don't grind it out, there are a few people who obviously win the lottery. They win the genetic lottery. They win the brains lottery. They win, you know, the lottery. They actually win the money from the lottery. I've never been the person who's relied upon winning the lottery as my strategy for getting forward. My strategy, and I think the one that I would tell anyone on this call, is one of, you know, enjoying the process. And the process is a toiling process. You have to enjoy the hard work. Everyone wants the reward, right? Everyone wants to be able to say that at the end of the day, they're Jeff Bezos. So, or everyone wants to say they're Kathy Hughes, a Black female billionaire. Everyone wants to be Oprah Winfrey. But it's the toil that gets you there. And you have to enjoy that process. And if you enjoy that process, my perception is that that creates the win. That creates, in retrospect, the excellence that people will be marked as. And let me be clear, I don't believe, Femi, that that means that the person has to be the smartest person in the room, the best connected in the room, the most high-born person in the room. I think they have to be a person, and I want your listeners to hear this. The people that I want to invest in are the ones who are working hard. I don't need you to have gone to Oxford and Cambridge, and so few of us do. So it doesn't necessarily matter. That's not a good pool for me to actually find. I mean, I found 1,000 companies last year. To find 1,000 companies, it would take me how many years of graduates of Cambridge in order to find 1,000 graduates who are actually Black? It would take me, you know, generations of So it's just, so that doesn't make sense. So it's not that I'm looking for those sorts of prerequisites, but what I am looking for is people who can demonstrate to me based on their past behaviors and other things that they have actually toiled through. And they have been able to look at reversals. And it doesn't just mean that, you know, we were born on a housing estate and I've been able to make it out of the housing estate. That's not it. You have to show me that you're going to be a good, but that could be very helpful in showing. But you have to show me that you're going to be a good steward for my capital, and you are going to have an idea, and that you're going to see it through to the end. And even when things get going, when the tough times come, and they will come, not just once, not just twice, they'll continue to come. How do you actually react to that? And can you keep moving forward? So that, and then the other piece I think is, besides tenacity and toil and grit, is deferred gratification. Because the funny thing is, you can't take your money off the table. You have to continue down that road. You can't have a little success and then buy a car and buy a house. It has to go back into the business. You can't sort of, you know, do that and then plan a huge wedding. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that these are impossible things to do, but that's not the outcome. The outcome is to build the business.
And that's amazing. And those are two things that, even apart from business, it doesn't matter what you do. Those two principles will get you a long way.
Yeah.
Enjoy the process, which is, and I think I read this somewhere, success in itself is its own reward. And hard work, if when you're working hard, you've got to enjoy it, because the success itself, in a way, and I hate to say this, is never quite guaranteed, because there's a lot outside your control. Mm-hmm. So, but one of the things you can do is enjoy it for itself.
I enjoy sleeping, right? I'm very good at it. Good at napping. I'm good at all those things. But for me, it is very important to say that even though I enjoy it, that's not necessarily the only thing to measure. Am I gratified in helping other people in terms of my, it would be great if I enjoyed my toil, but if indeed I'm grinding it out and I can see sort of an end result, and I can defer my gratification until I get to that end result, then that's what I'm talking about also. But I think you've got it down pat.
Yeah. And so it's really the long, you're in it for the long haul. And that, love that. Great. So get a bit, take it off track a bit. What are you reading at the moment? Any books, or what book, actually, what books changed things for you? Is there any book that you gift people the most? If you were to gift people a book, what book do you often gift people?
You know what I've been reading recently? I have been reading three books. One is a book about, and the reason I'm reading this, and it just so happened I was reading this before the pandemic and I still haven't finished, is a book from the, I think it's the late 1600s, early 1700s. It's a British book by an author, Defoe is his last name, and it's about the Great Plague. So the last great plague in the UK. And it's fascinating to read, because you're reading about a time when there's a high rate of illiteracy, there's a high rate of, you know, hygiene issues, all sorts of, you know, issues, and you have the plague come, and information has to be passed around. Public health has got to be executed. Things have got to happen. I was reading it because I wanted to know, if you're in a situation, how do you have the viral effect of making sure that information which is here is then known and disseminated to everyone? And that is a way that, you know, something like Instagram has become very clear, understood by a lot of people where it didn't exist, but there's a way, or Snapchat, there's a way in which, you know, it becomes part of the sort of a drumbeat, that's an underlying drumbeat, and everyone begins to know it. So how did that happen in the 16, this is related to 16, I think 1666, when the Great Plague happened. So it's fascinating to me. That's an interesting book. I have been reading also Lenny Henry's, the book that he's written about his early life. He's writing his memoirs in a series of books. And this is about when he's 16, his early life, and then he's up to 16, maybe 18. And he's talking about how he came to national prominence and what use would be now Britain's Got Talent when he won that national competition, and what did it do? And the reason I like that book is because it helps me to sort of see an individual's journey from, no one else could see he had that special spark, right? He was the youngest of a lot of kids. He was, you know, babied by his mom and his sisters, and protected by his brothers and sisters, et cetera. And one day he goes and does something that they didn't know he had the capacity to do. And the funny thing is, he comes home, and instead of being derided and pulled down, they applauded him when he performed the same act that was on television in front of them on the front steps. And it's just so interesting, sort of, what kind of support do we need in our communities, in our families, in our home, and in ourselves, in order to be able to then take the next step? So that was, for me, that's a fascinating sort of a story. And you know, Lenny writes in a very evocative fashion. And I'm not, you know, as African-American, we're not necessarily African-Caribbean. We've been in the United States for so long, and we don't have as close a tie to say, country of origin, where my family might have been from Burkina Faso and Malawi. We just don't have that sort of connection we have instead for the American South. That's how we feel of ourselves as our origin story. So, you know, but his is an Afro-Caribbean story. And so it's interesting to read that Afro-Caribbean story and how that actually feels, it feels very, you know, British, is a British kind of a narrative. And then I've been reading a lot of, you know what I read a lot of? I read a lot of proposals. A lot of proposals coming in from companies around and with all the most fascinating ideas that are going to change the world. And, you know, you feel such a privilege for someone to say to you, Eric, I want you to hear about a company that I've started or that I'm planning on starting or that I started some time ago. It's struggling or doing great. And I'm having such a good time, and it's such a privilege. You have to say a prayer every day that, you know, that you have been put and placed in this position in order to be able to actually be a rest stop along the road for these people in terms of their business. Yeah. And there are things that you can actually do to help. Even if you can't put money in, there are things that you can actually do to help. And that's what ImpactX does. So, that's what I'm reading. And let me tell you, those things have actually changed my life and reminded me on a daily basis of the
one you did. Yeah. And I guess that's a nice segue. Because so when you read those proposals, now that I've got a lot of budding entrepreneurs on this call, what do you want to tell them around fundamentals, foundational things that people get wrong, or we could do better at that would make your life harder because you'd have more companies to invest in.
You know what would make my life harder? If people thought of me not as their auntie, but as some hard-hearted capitalist out there who has a bunch of hard-hearted capitalists who are looking at me and saying, "I want my money back times three." That's sort of what is driving me in the background. There's someone sitting behind me. They're carrots and sticks, but there are a lot of sticks. And someone's behind me with a stick saying, "Eric, where's my 3X that you promised me?" And so when someone comes to me and they feel as though, you know, here's my baby, and the baby's wet. The baby has, you know, it has a full diaper, but I'm going to hand it to you. That's not as appealing, you know, a moment as a nice sort of being handled a nice sort of gentle sort of sleeping baby, you know, who smells very, very lovely. What I often will get is that people are like, "Well, you know, this is something and I'm just going to throw it at you. And please give me some advice as to how to make my deal, how to make my company work." And I have to say to people, it's just, that's not what we do. I'm not an agency to incubate and to accelerate your learning about how to be an entrepreneur. That's not what ImpactX does. There are organizations that do that, and here's some names. But come to me when you are ready for capital to grow your business to another level. Don't come to me with an idea on the back of a napkin. Don't come to me with something that you can't sort of show me from the facts that you've actually found customers, you've actually been able to build a business and a product, and that someone actually wants to pay for it, and that more people want to pay for it, and the only thing that's keeping you back is that you don't have enough money to help grow it to another level. That's what people need to understand. It would be much easier for them if they come to me at the right time. Most people want to come, it's like, "I need money. I've exhausted my own resources, and now I need some money from you." It's like, "But you haven't achieved anything. You haven't shown me that this business," and go back all the way, Femi, to the beginning of our conversation. You know, I don't see progress. I see a little bit of thought and I see a little bit of investment of time, but I don't see progress to help me to know that you have a business. This could be an avocation for you. This could be a pastime. I do not see you showing me that this is a business. Show me it's a real business. And then I invest in businesses. So show me a business.
So what you're looking for is clarity of thought. You've got a product market fit, which I think is what I learned from you, which shows that you have an idea that is tested.
Yeah.
You've tested it on a sample number and you've achieved revenue, a certain degree of revenue and net profit that shows that this is a viable business idea. And what you're now looking is for someone to turbocharge it with my money to the next level. That's what you're looking for.
You don't have to have profit. That's the only thing that I would differ from. I would say that, yes, you have to have revenue, or you have to have a revenue equivalent. So if you told me, Femi, if you came to me and said that you had 100,000 people who are using your app, and you told me that you got that to that 100,000 in less than a year, that's eye-opening. And I have to say, what is Femi doing? That I want to hear more about. If you tell me that Femi has an idea for an app because he believes that he knows a way to do exchange rates between Africa and the UK, and you can't show me that anyone has ever used it, that you've ever actually even been able to produce what you're talking about, that's not an idea I can invest in. And it might be a great idea. It might be a great idea to have a personal shopper or to have some sort of a product which is good for black skin because it's hyperallergenic. Until I see it, until you can actually show me that someone else wants it, that's not what I do.
Yeah. And do you think that's the primary reason of the dearth of black British or black entrepreneurs, is that maybe there's, for lack of role models or something, that rigor isn't there and that's what's stopping us? Or is it, I know from one of your interviews, you said you try not to focus on the whys too much anymore because you can waste too much time. But if you would indulge me, is that probably the reason why, that we just need a bit more education and role models around these metrics of what it looks like? Or is it, could it be that simple?
I wonder, Femi. So let's have the conversation. I think I am not so naive as to believe that there are not systemic reasons. Here in the UK, one out of two black families lives below the poverty line.
Yeah.
That's one out of two. For white families, and this is before COVID, This report was given in 2019. COVID didn't exist in anyone's vocabulary, whether you're in China or whether you're here in Europe. So if that's the case, in white families, it's one out of five in the UK. There is a difference in terms of wealth. If you go to the bank and you're a poor family, and one of two of us are actually from a poor family, which is more likely that we don't own a house, which is more likely that we're in a low-paying job. Most of us are working, but we might be in low-paying jobs. And most of these people who are below the poverty level are working poor. So if what we're talking about is therefore that there are systemic things that mean you make less money, you don't have any assets that can then be taken to the bank. When you go to the bank, you're not going to get a loan. And everyone's going to tell you, look, there's a process, it's a fair process. You stick in these numbers and it tells you whether or not we can give you a loan. We have taken all of the discretion out of it so that black people are not undermined. If you don't make as much money, if you don't have as many assets, and you can't have that because of various racism that's in the system, then that doesn't work. So let's say I do understand those types of things. If we have anything to focus on with respect to black entrepreneurs, I do believe that it has to do with that aspiration level. It's exactly what you're talking about, Femi. We must unleash the beast within. And it cannot be that we're unleashing the beast so that you can go work at PricewaterhouseCoopers for the rest of your life, and you can live in North London, and you can have two children that go to public school. If that is your definition of success, I agree that it can be very successful, and I do not begrudge anyone who wants to do that. That is not what I'm looking for. And maybe one of the challenges is that we spend so much time, you know, Femi, if you grew up in a family like I did, if you were a doctor, or if you became a lawyer, or if you became an accountant, that was success. We look at the rest of the world and we understand that that is a success factor, but that there are other ways of being successful too. But if what we say is, you know, it's easier for me to go to my family reunion and say that I am Dr. Eric Collins and I perform surgery at the Royal Free or wherever it is. It's easy to say that, and everyone will say, oh my goodness, you know, auntie, you know, this is what he's doing. He's obviously very successful. It's very hard to say, you know what? I started an organization called Cashmere App, which is a savings app for women and men who like brands. And it's also a way of teaching literacy. And no one has heard about it yet. We have 3,000 or 10,000 people who use it, but it's going to be big one day, and it's going to rival Monzo one day. That's a harder thing to say. And if we could get over that sort of need, that's an instant gratification. I get affirmed every day from being a doctor. I don't get affirmed every day from being an entrepreneur, and especially not an entrepreneur who's trying to build a big business and who's trying to build a business that's never been seen and trying to disrupt. So that's the only thing that I would say that I would focus on in terms of the individual. Make your aspirations bigger, and then to understand that, you know, you don't have to follow the path that's an easy path or the one that lots of people understand in order to then be, you know, a fulfilled, successful person who's actually creating a better world.
It's that paradigm shift, isn't it? And that's for the entrepreneur and their supporters, their family is
their ecosystem, exactly. Their spouse.
Yeah.
Think about
their spouse.
Think about yeah. Do you know Dave Chappelle, the American
Yeah. Comedian? Yeah.
Remember what Dave Chappelle said? He had to come home and tell his wife that he passed up $50 million. Has he not, you know, continued to be sort of a social commentator and someone who's doing fantastic things?
Yeah, yeah.
He had to go home and admit, I turned down $50 million today to continue my sketch comedy show because I can't do it anymore. That's a bravery that you have to actually have, and that the people around you, and his wife obviously didn't divorce him, didn't sort of, you know, throw him out of the house. She instead said, we get it. And then we're going to move. You can do what you need to do, and we will do what we need to do. That's important.
Yeah. And that's a lovely way to sort of start to wrap this up. One other thing, I mean, as the year draws to a close, this podcast will probably be going out end of the year, beginning of the new year, 2021. What is your big reflections for last year? And what's your reflections on this year after this crazy year? What's your personal reflections and your take on, what are you looking forward to in 2021?
So this is actually interesting for me. That's a great question, because I believe that the biggest thing that I learned in 2020, and this is a year in which a lot of things have happened to everyone in the world collectively and then individually, is that when something is considered important, and I have said this before, all bets are off. And the world will do things never considered possible. The world is, you are still shut down in the UK, in London, if you're Eric Collins, because the government has said that's something that needs to happen. Where I should be going into an office, or normally on the train going to an office, or going to some Christmas party tonight, or going out to drinks with friends, that is not happening. And in fact, restaurants, all those sorts of things, closed, shuttered, things that we could never imagine could happen. If indeed, but they will be done in order to survive, then we'll survive again, we'll survive today to live another day in the future. And look, if that same tenacity and that same approach was taken to systemic racism, that it cannot stand anymore, it cannot exist, and we are going to get rid of it, and we are going to do extraordinary things to get rid of it. We're not going to do incremental things. We're not going to have an evidence-based conversation about it. We're not going to make projections that are 10 years in the future or 30 years in the future. We are going to do this today. I learned in 2020 that around the world, governments will do that, and they will do it for things that are considered critical. And I think that racism and sexism are critical issues which need to be excised from the world. So that's one thing. So that means then for 2021, I'm looking forward to Black people who now have a vocabulary and have a window of opportunity, women who have a vocabulary and a window of opportunity when the world is still focused on these sorts of issues, the news cycle might change, that we make the most of it. And we actually gather what we can while we can. And I'm also saying I'm so looking forward to a paradigm change in the world, because there's a woman named Kamala Harris, who is the Vice President of the United States, a Black woman, not a Black man, not a white woman, a Black woman and an Asian woman who will be occupying the second most powerful seat in the world. It's not in the United States, that's in the world. And that, to me, is something that will make my 2020, from the election on, and you know, for the rest of her time in office, it will make me think that, you know, not only is there a God, but that there is the arc of justice, the arc of history sort of veers towards justice, as Martin Luther King said, as Barack Obama quoted in his first inauguration. That's what I believe. And so that's what I'm going to be focusing on.
Wow. Lovely. Amazing words. And I'd like to encourage our listeners, unless you have a specific message for any entrepreneurs this year, before we wrap up, because that was a nice way to end. Any message for our entrepreneurs?
Oh, entrepreneurs, 2020, there's a lot of capital out in the market and it's harder to get. So you've got to come with your A game. So come with your A game, but go out there and do what you need to do. And you don't have to raise money necessarily. You can also bootstrap. And that's a way to hold on to your company, because raising money is a whole nother job. It's as hard a job as building your company. How's that?
Fantastic. Yeah, that's lovely. That's great. So I want to give you a quick opportunity. Impact X. I know we know what you do and we can check it out. Do you want to give a quick pitch? But the other thing is, any of our listeners who wanted to invest in Impact X, are they welcome?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things, thank you, Femi, for mentioning that. You have to be in the UK and everywhere. In order, if you're investing in a venture capital, it's pretty illiquid, meaning you can't get your money in and out. It's not like going to the bank and you sort of put your money in and then 2 weeks later you can get it out. You put your money in for a long period of time. That's for up to 10 years. So if you need the money, this is it, and you are living, so you actually have to prove for us to be able to take your money that you can actually do without that money. So that's why you have a lot of high net worth individuals. But if there are high net worth individuals out there who can actually fulfill the statutory requirements, happy to talk with them about that. You just come to www.impactxcapital.com. That's both for investors, but also for entrepreneurs. On our website, on the front page, there's a little down at the bottom. It says for entrepreneurs. It's an intake form so you can be introduced to us. Tell us about your company. All the criteria that we use to judge whether or not we're going to speak to you are in that intake form. Fill out the intake form and follow the steps, and then you will be introduced to ImpactX.
Fantastic. Thank you. So everyone, you heard it here, 2021. There is money out there. You just got to have the idea and bring your A game. Thank you, Eric, so, so much for blessing us with your time, insight, wisdom, and those words of encouragement to everyone out there. You've heard it, everyone. It is possible to build a big business. It is possible to be the next Amazon. It doesn't matter what your background is, black, white, it's available to everyone. And thanks to companies like Impact X, it is possible as well to be a black entrepreneur and get the funding you need to take it to the next stratospheric level. I usually say done is better than perfect, and that's so true. But the message here today is think big, bring your A game, be resilient, be ready to be in it for the long haul, and leave your money on the table. You've got to be able to play it out and wait for your returns. And above all, just go for it. Go for it, because there is something out there for you. With that said, get unleashed, stay unleashed.